Okay, let's get started today. The notes of this, what we're going to go over today, we decided to just, instead of handing out notes, just to give you each a book. Some of you folks have already received it, this book here, but it will go over a lot of what we're talking about in various different ways. So when you leave today, Adam in the back there wearing a knight's shirt would be more than glad to give you a book that has most of the material that we're going to talk about in it and more. So we thought that would be the best way to do it. Let's begin by praying. God, I just ask that you will speak through me and help us as leaders work through the various challenges that are part of men's leadership. And just bless us together and bless the ministries represented here and the hearts represented here. Guide us and direct us in all things that we do and say. In Jesus' name, amen. So let's begin by trying to figure out what are some of the leadership challenges that you face as a leader. And I thought what we'd first start out is just give you an opportunity to share a leadership challenge that comes to your mind, and then I will, in a few minutes, go over the material as I see it. So what, when you think of areas that cause you as a leader to get discouraged, to cause you to kind of question, am I in the right line of work? What areas, what happens? What causes you to get to that point?
Lack of trust.
Lack of trust. What do you mean by that?
Having followers who can, I don't know, see your vision or trust you.
Okay, all right. So it's like you're going, I'm going to show folks kind of a plan or a way of going, and it doesn't feel like they're going to get on board right away with it or trust it. Okay. Others? Yeah.
I think isolation, not having enough like-minded brothers around you.
Okay.
Feeling like you got something to do, you got a message, you got a method, you got a purpose and all that stuff, but you're just kind of on your own.
Okay, all right. Sense of isolation.
Yeah.
All right. Some of the insensitive things that sometimes are told you as a men's leader at times feel personal. And as a result, it increases your likelihood of feeling isolated. You kind of figure out, you know, they said that special negative sentence for me. And so that increases your sense of isolation from others. Other things struggle. Yes.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I get frustrated or struggled with is when, like, my pastor won't you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not engaged, but won't endorse what I'm proposing. That's good, Larry, but that we don't want to really mess with that right now.
Okay.
And that's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you, and how many pastors do we have here? Okay. You know, I'm an ordained minister along with being a licensed psychologist, and I have a big company in Pennsylvania with 600 employees that do all kinds of counseling, drug and alcohol, sex offenders, work with autistic children in schools all over the place. And when I first wrote the program Knights that we market to churches, I was surprised at some of the resistances that the pastors showed me regarding their willingness to not just look at Knights, but just to look at men's ministry. So if you want to go on that journey with me that is less than perfect and somewhat controversial, I put those chapters purposely in the back of the book so that you could hear all the good things that are less controversial prior to that. But I literally have a chapter in there trying to come up with the various reasons I've seen why pastors, I don't think, want a men's ministry in their church. And when I look at it, and we won't have time to go over that today, the end result was, as I went on this journey with God and wrote this chapter and struggled with whether or not to put it in, because it sure wasn't going to look pretty, the end result is pastors are like us. You know, pastors are like us. You know, we struggle with relationships. They struggle with relationships. You know, we have certain needs, whether they're stated or not, that sometimes limit our effectiveness as leaders. They have certain needs that limit their effectiveness as a leader. And so as I went through this, you know, I get scared creating a new relationship with somebody because you never know whether it's going to end up good or bad, or you know, you're going to be best friends, or the person's going to say something that bothers you on an emotional level. And they feel the same way. And so, you know, we put the chapter towards the back of the book, and part of it is for us to join up with pastors and try to become the support system in a way that some of those resistances drop because trust is formed and they can see that we have the best interest at heart. But clearly, you know, getting the pastors involved at times has been an amazing challenge. I know that on the, you know, iron sharpens iron circuit, and at one point, you know, going to the various conferences, we figured out, I think less than 15% of the time the pastor attends with the men. And so there would be a lot of men at times leaving excited, hey, I want to go do something in my church. And then we would call as a follow-up, and they talk with their pastor, and the time and the place wasn't right, etc. And so that's something we in men's ministry sometimes struggle with. But in reality, some of the problems we're going to go over today that are the same problems that they have as well, because I think we're all human, whether we want to be or not. Other issues that when you look at what trips you up or what do you struggle with regarding men's ministry?
A lack of interest. I run into men that say, you know, in their minds, I've got it all together.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that's a lack of interest or what I run into.
Okay. Well, just a lack of interest. Yeah.
I think part of it is a lack of wanting to commit time, or right, knowing what kind of time and commitment there's going to be. I mean, we're in a world where you can cook food in 2 minutes or less, and, you know, you've got information at your fingertips, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But we still don't have enough time, you know, in the way they look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably at our church. A lot of people go, I come home from work, and back of a better term, no one got to decompress, whatever mm-hmm. they call it. And then I've got my family to deal with. Where am I going to fit time in with the church other than Sunday and Wednesday? So I think the time commitment.
Okay, time.
Knowing what kind of commitment's going to be.
All right. Others, yeah.
I think the pastors are the fear of failure.
Uh-huh.
If they failed probably at some point in time in this process, or the process has failed in their church, and like all of them, we don't want to fail again and again and again.
Oh, that's right, yeah. They've had so many folks sometimes come along and say, hey, I want to start a men's ministry. And they've supported that individual, and then the individual kind of fades on them, and then they have another thing on their to-do list, another job that needs to be done, and that's kind of challenging. One of the things that I like to suggest in us working with churches and men's ministry and dealing with some of the challenges is that we need to see the message as sacred and not the methodology. The message is sacred and not the methodology. So that you at times can be, you know, some of the times we're discouraged is that we're following somebody else's template for how to get something done versus involving how God created us to be. And giving ourselves permission to move in the direction of a more creative perspective, I think, will allow us to be invigorated. Because if we try to do somebody else's shtick instead of one that fits uniquely how God has created us to be, we end up bored trying to keep the guys from becoming bored at what we're doing. And so it's very important that we allow ourselves to recognize the methodology is what's not sacred. It's the message. And so any way that we can get Jesus Christ and an ongoing relationship with Him, and has been rightfully emphasized in this conference, creating relationships among men with each other, it's going to work out well. A second area of this, as we look at men's ministry in our own lives, is that we will become less frustrated as leaders if we take time to study the fish. You know, God called us, Jesus Christ talked about us being fishers of men. And, you know, I hunt. And for a long time, I had this sentence, I would say, which is not a good one. And it was, I can't get a deer as long as a Shanley is in the woods. Because, see, God's blessed me, and I live on 150 acres. So the deer are all but fenced in. And, you know, my brother-in-law's and his family, the Shanleys, would come and hunt with me, you know, and they always got the deer. And then, you know, I'd walk out and maybe I'd get some puny thing, you know, at the end of the journey. All right. And about a year or two ago, you know, I heard the Shanleys talking. Okay, because they stay at my house during hunting season. And I walked in on a conversation that was around the corner. And they said, you know, that Roy, the last couple years, has gotten the deer first and the biggest one. What's going on here, you know? And I like, got him, you know? But what changed was I started to study the deer. And I started to study the deer patterns and understand it. There's a section in the back of this book that, you know, put it on the toilet, okay? Just put the book on the toilet, all right? And because it's a good place to read, all right? And in chapter 11, you know, that you get, says study the fish. Okay, and leave it there for as ever long as it takes, and periodically just pick it up, and you will see bullet points on men, bullet points on the hormones in a man, and what occurs and how they affect them. For instance, when we deal with the isolation of men, okay. You know, we men have a hormone called testosterone. Now, most of the time, when we think of testosterone, we think of sexuality, and that's absolutely accurate. In fact, one of the facts is that if you take a young male, let's say 6 or 7, okay, and you would extract the testosterone from his body, and using the metaphor of an alcoholic, okay, of alcohol, but testosterone equals alcohol, do you know that, let's say, a 7-year-old boy will have basically 2 ounces of alcohol, okay, and a 15 to 16-year-old male will have 2.5 gallons of alcohol at all particular times flowing through the body? So in dealing with some of the fish or the people that we minister to, we're going to end up less frustrated if we understand certain aspects that are changing in a man, so that when we deal with different parts of their season of life, they change. For instance, the other day at the meal, my wife stopped at the table briefly because she needed my key to the room, and all of a sudden my first grandchild was there. Okay, and the minute I saw my first Silas walk in with my daughter holding him, you know, life stopped for that particular second for me. Okay, I mean, I was gone, you know. Now, what we know, if we study the fish, okay, is from 50 to 55 on, the male's body changes. And you know, part of that change process is the hormones change. And part of the hormones changing is the male has more hormones that connect up to what a woman has as a woman bonds with a child. So where I was attached to my daughter and son, and I love my daughter and son, okay, I have never felt with my daughter and son because I didn't have the chemical constitution to do that, what I feel when that Silas walks in the room. And my daughter keeps looking at me. You know, the other day we had a conversation, and she made the mistake of giving my wife a calendar with a cup for Valentine's Day with Silas's picture on it. And I put her aside, and they put it on my desk, so I saw it to give it to my wife. And I said to her, "Hey, the new rule is two calendars, two cups, you know, I'll pay for it. But you never put another calendar on there again. And I have to give this calendar I want." You know? But I didn't have the chemicals. You know, a couple years ago, you know, there's the cup. I don't want it. I don't drink coffee, you know. So to understand the fish will assist us in understanding the people we minister to so that we get less frustrated. Now let's go back to testosterone. Okay, along with testosterone equaling sexuality, testosterone has several other non-pleasant relational factors. All right. For instance, testosterone causes us to become aggressive. Okay, which may help relationally, but a lot of times in social etiquette, controlling aggression is a good thing. The second thing testosterone does, okay, is it immediately causes us, when we walk up to somebody, to put them in a pecking order and start to judge them regarding where they are in relationship to us. Okay? Now, when we look at who Jesus Christ is, okay, some of these biological responses, and we'll get off of biology in a second, you know, don't necessarily are pro how we would define, you know, how we're supposed to love and act from a Christ-like perspective with other people. And so part of understanding and struggling less is the first thing is, you know, the more we know the fish, the more we know the deer, the better we know ourselves. So I can understand Silas and how he's different from Kim and Nick in my life, and I have different feelings. And I can understand you, so that when you come in and I realize that you had a child and you were connected, but suddenly now you're feeling something completely different, I know, you know, I got to make a big deal out of that. You know, that is a very important godly step in your life, becoming a grandfather, because of the biology of it. And so what we want to do is we want to be aware of just the various kinds of issues that our men are dealing with, because it then gives us a frame of reference so that when we are helping them apply Christ to their life, we understand the aspects of change that are occurring within them. And so Study the Fish just lists just a lot of little bullet facts based on the male brain and various other things, so that when you are in a leadership pattern and something's not working, you can say to yourself, you know, is there an aspect of how men are that if I approach it this particular way, for instance, if I move instead of trying to connect them immediately up with relationships, one more thing about testosterone is it's territorial. Okay, it creates territorial things. So the minute we bring men together and we say we're going to have you relate to one another, the first thing these men metaphorically do, thank goodness it's metaphorically, is they pee between each other lines. Okay, so that everybody stays, this is my space. Okay, and if you want to discourage men from coming to some place, put them into a confined space and let them touch each other, especially on the legs, you know, next to each other. I mean, notice, chair, space, you know, you like her, so it's okay, there's no space, you know, but this is how it works. Okay, so that means then when you as a leader are going, I feel isolated. Okay, I'm trying to help men overcome their isolation. I am going against some biological aspects here that we don't give in to it. But one of the things we do is this. We know that because of that isolation factor, we need, okay, to spend more time with somebody over a period of time. So I met Ron X amount of years ago, maybe 3 or 4, and I see him at fuel conferences, and each time, you know, we have a little bit more of an interaction. And, you know, he shares with me an idea in Chambersburg of a conference, and I share something in the area he may not know. And over a period of time, you know, that line in the sand starts to fade a little bit, and we get close to one another. But if we're going to build an effective men's ministry and we're going to try to do it overnight, and we define effectiveness as intimate, connected relationships with each other, we need a long-term perspective to be able to get this done. And we have to also recognize the resistances we have in building relationships, which keeps us isolated within our ministry, and develop a long-term relationship that way in order to break down the particular barriers. So therefore, a lot of times when you look at church ministries that are ending up frustrating us, is what ends up happening is a person will start a 10-week program, they'll put up the stuff, they'll get something started, and then it stops. And then they'll wait for a while, and then they'll start another 10-week or 15-week program, and it stops. But if we understand the male tendency towards isolation, we know that they're going to initially start being defensive with one another. And one of the ways to overcome that is to put them in the room consistently long enough so that eventually what ends up happening is, instead of peeing on the line between us, I pee out around my brother here. Now he's in my territory. Now I defend him to the death. So what we have to do to accomplish and be less frustrated is to recognize this is a process. In fact, in group therapy, there'll be three, and this is in the book, three different stages that people go through. Okay, and I'll quick go over them with you, but you have to get through these stages in order to get that level of intimacy that you're grading yourself about, that you're not happy, that you're not achieving it. The first phase, let me find it here, is called I want to get the exactly right. The inclusion phase. And in that particular phase, that lasts anywhere from 5 to 12 to 13 weeks, 15 weeks. It's just going, do I want you in the same group as me? One of our frustrations, isn't as men leaders, is you put a group, one guy with another guy, and you have this fantasy of this like beautiful chemistry that's going to emerge. I mean, they're both farmers, they're both accountants, you know. They both have children that, you know, and it just looks like, hey, you know, let's create this mentorship. And all of a sudden, they're both looking at you as their leader, going, why'd you do this to me? You know, and you get a feeling you're in a bit of trouble here. Okay, well, they've got to go through a time period before they figure out the guy's still going to be there and they're going to be willing to stick with it long enough in order for the level of intimacy to occur. Okay, so you have inclusion. That in that phase, no one's being real, by the way. We're all trying to impress one another because I don't want you not to like me. So the level of intimate conversation about who Christ is, all that, is short-circuited by the more immediate desire of me wanting to feel accepted and okay about where I'm at. So that's the inclusion phase. The next then, eventually, if you keep them together long enough, it goes into the influence phase. That's where trust begins. And over time, there's many ways that they share with the other person something that they're pretty sure the other person does not want to hear. So, you know, they might say, well, you know, maybe I'm voting for Trump. Okay, well, now that could get some things started. Okay, or maybe so they're going to start to just share little less intimate things, but just testing the guy. What's going to happen when we're in disagreement, and how are you going to handle that? And so it's moving from the I want to please you, we're just going to kind of get through this time period, to more deeper connection. And then it moves into the intimacy phase, where I start to feel particularly safe with you, and I'm willing to start to be real, and I may be willing to do what it says in James, confess my sin one to another. I'm starting to recognize that you're not going to scream, yell, and run out and go, no, no, no. So one of the areas that we struggle with as leaders, okay, is the same thing the people that we minister to struggle with, and that is with the struggle in the area of isolation. And it takes a period of time for us to develop the kind of accountabilities, relationships we need as a leader. And it takes a period of time for us to create the right kind of relationships among men where they can go through these phases of relational connection so that they can start to become strong enough so that when we know this, that the predators of life tempt us when we're alone. We know that from a Barnard study, 74%, give or take, 94%, give or take, of men said they did not have a close man relationship. Okay, if we look that our goal is for people to become Christ-like, and Jesus was God, and Jesus had 12 disciples, Martha, Mary, Lazarus, and a few others, he had three special folks to take in very difficult situations. Part of our role as leaders is to have those special relationships created for ourselves, so when the inevitable struggles come along, we have somebody to help share the weight with what's going on. But part of also is for us to create those relationships for guys so that they can have that safe place where they can start to be real with one another. And it has to be with other men. It doesn't have to be in a program like Knights Stepping Up or Men's Fraternity, but it has to be relationships with other men. Because men will get certain things from their women relationships and certain things from their men relationships, and they're not the same. Now, I know we have two women here, so I'm going to say this real carefully. Women have one problem, okay? All right? And because of that one problem, no other problem but this one problem, okay? They have this problem. It affects men in some of their sharing. And because men don't have this problem with each other, getting men together is necessary, along with the areas of certain topics like sexuality. Some of those issues just should not be done in a mixed setting. Okay, so the problem is this, that women will always ask a man one more question than he was planning on answering. All right. And I've said this in American Association of Christian Counselors, because I'm a psychologist, and it was great. All these women counselors came up to me afterwards and go, "You're absolutely right." Okay? So we'll pick on Pete here for a second. Pete and I have a deal. Okay? And we've never talked about the deal. And the deal is that in the middle of sharing with him, if Pete has too much, and he doesn't want to go any deeper, all Pete has to do is give me a certain kind of look. And when I see that look, I stop. It's just a look. And it's a look like, if you go any further, what could happen is not necessarily good to you. Okay? All right, and Pete and I know the deal. We never, met. We know the deal. All right, and the reason I stop is twofold. I stop because I don't want to die. Okay, and I also stop because I want to look at Pete when I'm in beyond where I'm ready to go, and I want to say, and I want Pete to stop. Because if Pete doesn't stop, killing him just gets so messy. Okay? So we have that communication. All right? Where I'll go home and I'll say, I'm going to share my day with my wife. All right? And sadly, I actually have to say that, and then I have to memorize what I'm sharing. Okay? Because a lot of times, if left to myself, how was your day? You know, when you hear how was day, okay, fine. I mean, this is our automatic answer. Woman says, how's your day? We say, fine, okay. And and I add sometimes the philosophical statement, which doesn't help. I already lived through it once. I want to do it again. All right. So, but I'm going to share with Jan, who's a psychologist, God love her, and my daughter is as well, so we have a lot of fun. And so I'll share, and then she'll say, and she'll keep asking me questions until we go to where the male ego, which we all love and adore too much, we don't have the answer. Okay? We made up a few things before that. It didn't stop the questioning where we are. Okay. So this is the way it works. All right. But because we have this deal, Pete and I, if we can create intimate conversations like Christ had in his group, and we can get men to relate to one another, what's going to happen is over a time period, I'm going to start to risk on thin ice with Pete, where I can't with my wife, Jan. Because if I go out here, I feel more vulnerable, because it's likely emotions for her are like an Olympic swimming event. I am in the baby pool. Okay? And even her brain and how it switches back and forth and the speed in certain zones. It's like, you know, and I'm kind of, wait a minute, I just got on my tricycle. All right? But with another guy, you know, we kind of know each other. We kind of have the same way of processing information. There's a woman named Deb Tannen, okay, that said this, a five to seven-year-old girl is more neurolinguistically like an adult woman than an adult man is like an adult woman. Meaning that little girl thinks more like that woman than this man thinks like that woman. Because we use language differently. We emphasize different kinds of things. So I can go out on thin ice with Pete because I know if I go too far and scare myself with my openness and vulnerability, I can immediately shut it down with a look. And because of that, I can get Pete's feedback. I can hear myself talk differently, okay, than I ever talked inside myself. And so I get to know me. Now, once it gets to be thicker ice in my men's group or with my accountability partners, which we all need as leaders, I then step over and say, Jan, let me tell you. Now, I don't tell her, by the way, this is so thick, even your questioning will not threaten me. Okay, I don't tell her that. Okay, I just move over and share because I've become comfortable with it. Now, while I'm on that issue, I'm further out on thin ice over here again with Pete. And so part of creating those effective relationships for us as men and as leaders, and part of us helping the men that we minister to, it's the same thing because we're men, is developing the right kind of atmosphere with guys, with other men, we can start to share aspects of ourselves that are undigested. One area, let's go over five areas that men struggle with, period. And then we'll see how far we get. The first one is that we men struggle with what manhood is. When do we become men? I mean, we're working with men. We need to figure out what our definition of manhood is. We need to understand that. Now, my definition of manhood is that manhood is a state, not a stage. So I believe I can be in and out of manhood. And I consider manhood that I'm a man if I'm in the manhood state 85 to 90% of the time. Because when I'm choosing to act in a sinful manner, and when I'm choosing to act in an immature manner, I am clearly moving away from who Jesus Christ is, the ultimate model of manhood. So I see it more as a state, not a once and done stage. So at certain times, if I'm not careful, the little boy Roy can come out. And certain times when we're in men's ministry, we can see someone we're leading saying some amazing insensitive things, amazing harmful things, and acting in amazing immature ways. You know, I'm going to go have this affair, you know, that with this woman I just met. Well, what about your six kids, your wife, and your commitment to Christ? You know, well, we'll deal with that later. I mean, you know, that it can occur very quickly, the regression. Now, in Knight's language, in the program I wrote, one night I prayed to God and I said, God, give me a name for this part of myself because I actually think I can go immature and leave my manhood faster than Satan can show up. Okay, I think I'm fast at this, sadly, but there's times it's true. And so God told me in the middle of the night, when you're right about this, call him the spandex male. All right. Now, at the time, I didn't know what spandex was. I have since figured out I don't look good in it. But the spandex male stretches around the world instead of making the world stretch around him. Doesn't stand up for anything. And so, you know, we walked around to folks and said, what do you think of the word spandex? And it was the funniest thing. If I called you a spandex male, these guys wanted to fight with me. And God told me the night before. And I said, okay, God, that's what we prayed. I said, give me a name that emotionally is offensive to men. We should be offended when we leave our manhood. When we step away from Jesus Christ, we should go, what in the world? Why am I putting myself in a hole? So we need to develop our manhood, have a definition for our manhood if we're going to work with men. And we should have a heart for men of all ages. For instance, one of the concerns we have is the exodus of 18 to 25 year old males. And one of the research studies said that if you showed a kid a lesson, describe dad to me, and that child is three, and then you and seven in various ages, and then you say, describe God to me, the child will define the father and God in similar fashions. So when we are working with men, it is a most noble effort. That Sunday school class with that child puts X amount of input into that child's life for the history of that child attending Sunday school class. That father, who is the model of God in the home, on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis, that is an amazing, powerful source affecting that child's life regarding what God is, what manhood is. So what God has called you guys to do is just amazing work to me, because you're working with men which are creating a domino effect whereby the children that watch them get a sense of who God will be, so that when they end up in counseling with me, okay, and I point to their fathers, the father is seen as a strength, as God is a strength in their life, versus what happens in reverse. So the first struggle that we have to deal with in ourselves is establishing our own manhood. And part of that is saying goodbye to some of those negative messages that are part of our thinking. We all have negative messages, like Mrs. Dwyer, you know, she was a nice lady. I tell people I went to a 2-room schoolhouse. The neat thing about having 3 grades to a room is if you have a problem with the teacher in the first year, you got 2 more years to work it out. And so Mrs. Dwyer says, Roy, you're going to be nothing but a ditch digger. You know, you're going to be this, you're going to be that. Well, the men we work with have those filters in them of all these negative messages. And so part of what we're working with them on manhood is to say goodbye to some messages that are keeping them from manhood. Part of what we need to do as leaders is to be aware of our own filter systems, the people in our life that have negatively defined us, and we need ways to free ourselves from that. Otherwise, our own manhood is undermined, which is going to hurt us as leaders, being leaders of men. So we need to look at our own personal journeys and how we got where we got. So the first struggle that we can look at is manhood, and that's a significant aspect. I'm going to say a sentence and then you just look at me. If you want to nod one way or the other, you can. You're a sinner. You're a sinner. You're a sinner. You're a sinner. I want to be equal opportunity. You're a sinner. You're a sinner. Sinner. Okay. I can't be completely equal opportunity on the next one. All right. Everybody, you're not a man. 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 You took it for her. You're not a man. What's the difference? Can you feel it? Can you feel it? The one we go, and the other one we go, I got the look, Pete. I got the look, Pete.
Pete gave me the look.
Okay, Pete gave me the look. Okay? But manhood, if Jesus Christ is the ultimate man, is sanctification. The more I am a man, the more I am like Christ, the more sanctified I become. But if you look at me and you go, Roy, that behavior is sinful and you're a sinner, I'm more likely to go to this. But if you take the exact same behavior and you go, when you do that, you're not much of a man. All of a sudden, we're interacting with Christ within us and the Holy Spirit in a different way to get something else done that we were kind of passively almost accepting defeat because of the, oh, wretched man that I am, which is true. And so, using manhood as a term for sanctification, both within our own struggles in our walk as men and becoming Christ-like, and using manhood as a way of challenging the people, the men that we work with, and getting them to see manhood and sin are in direct contradiction to one another. So by helping men with their struggle, we can also help us with one of our major struggles, which is whether or not I show up to help God fight my addictive impulses, or whether I sit there and go, God, you got, I got this one. Please help me, you know, not do this immature behavior, but then I don't consider the, from a manly perspective, what the consequences are. So the first struggle that we struggle with as leaders and others do is manhood. The second one we went over is isolation. And one of the problems in with us and the men we work with is how to create long-term supportive relationships through those stages, and also how to give ourselves time to understand how can we show affection. Because affection threatens men. How do I say I care about you? Normal way we show affection to one another is to bust on the other guy. And the bigger the way you bust on him, meaning the more you threaten yourself with extinction by ticking him off, and he doesn't kill you, the more affection must exist between you two. Okay? Now, when we go home and we try the same technique with the women, how's it work? Not a good one. It doesn't work the same way. Yeah?
The prank that happened in our office last week was a perfect example.
Yes.
The guys who pranked me as a new... I didn't want to take away.
No, go ahead. Go tell them the example.
So I have a new position, not only with Knights, but with the company as an education director. And so I was doing orientation for all the new employees, and the new employees always have to fill out a feedback form. And so day two, I'm sitting in orientation, they're watching the video, and I get the feedback summary. And it's just like, Adam has a terrible list. That reason is, who said that? So the vice president of our company walks in and is like, so I heard you got some bad feedback from this group. I'm like, stop, they're here, they're right here. It might be one of them. But the guys in the company loved it. It word spread so fast. But the women, they were
the vice president made it up. Snuck it in on the list.
He snuck it in. It was a big crack. But the women were so, they were affected. I was
All the women came to save Adam. All the men were going, let him die. We're welcoming into the company, and isn't it different? I mean, you can see the styles of showing affection to one another, and we're all going, you know, Adam knows we love him now. You know, he's part of the team. And so that, basically, you know, when you look at the isolation of men, that's one of the areas, you know, how can we do this? And we also have to understand that when you start to put men together, there is going to be a certain percentage that quit. All right? And one of the areas I struggle with, I mean, when we look at, I read management books for fun, leadership books. And I just read in the last couple months, two by Navy SEALs. Probably read five or six written by Navy SEALs over my career. And I mean, you think of those guys. What causes us to like them and have such respect? X amount of started and X amount finished. Because they were willing to push themselves beyond everything else. In the church, if we have a third of the guys leave something, okay, we get so panicked when in reality it could be because we're doing it right. Because if I'm pushing these men in a way that's developing less isolation, where they have to go places that they weren't willing to go, voting with your feet is a very appropriate way versus shooting me. So it's okay that you voted with your feet. I'm going to let you vote with your feet. And when your wife and you sees what happens with the Navy SEALs that are left, maybe you'll come back and try again. And so as a result, sometimes we dumb down a lot of our areas of working with men because the almighty number, quantity, beats quality. And so, and we know that if we isolation's an issue for men and we put them in there, there are going to be guys that are going to go, do you know that if this keeps going where it's going, I'm going to have to share my pornography issue. Or it's starting to become inconvenient what I'm doing on Tuesday nights that nobody knows about. And so that kind of guy voting with his feet. But instead we go, wait a minute, we've got to make sure that guy can still keep coming. All right, and the only way to do it is to change whatever approach you're choosing, and it doesn't help. Let's go to three. Okay, so the third one that hurts us and men, and that is dealing with the strange world of emotions. The culture is prejudiced against women in certain ways. The culture is prejudiced against men in certain ways. The ungodly culture attacks men emotionally. It attacks us as men leaders emotionally. And as a result, many of us are disconnected from our emotions. And part of what we need to do as leaders to become more effective with men's ministry in our struggles is to work harder and more clearly on developing our emotional IQ. So we should know, let's say, the six types of emotions and how dealing with, these are broad categories, dealing with these emotions are all called for in certain parts of life. Like when Lazarus dies, Jesus Christ feels sad. Okay? Now, unfortunately, a lot of times, instead of us as leaders having the full smorgasbord of emotion that we can apply to the situation, we get stuck on one or two. And the most famous one is anger. So that when there's books written on depression, and they go, you know, men are depressed different than women. How do you know? They're angry. Men are anxious different than women. How do you know? They're angry. Okay. So part of what we're working on now, when you look at men leadership, more and more women are being hired for leadership positions in men because of the area of emotional IQ, not being developed in men, and as a result of men being cut off from their emotions, they say things that get the company sued. And they do things that get the company sued. Where if you want to maximize as a man leader the motivation and the momentum you're creating with your men, learning how to read their emotional base, the man you're dealing with, knowing how to read your own emotional base, and to be able to express it in the direction that you want it to go for, is going to make you struggle less, because you're more likely to be successful because you motivated folks. So the six are, in case you want to know them, are fear, anger, love, excitement, sadness, and happiness. And in this, I don't know if they're in this book, but they're all listed out, and then a whole bunch of adjectives under each of the six types are listed out in this book, which is for men and mentoring young men, because we want them to get in touch with understanding their emotional IQ. And that's some area that we have to work on. Otherwise, we keep running into the same problems over and over again. When are we done? Okay. So now, why men got cut off from their emotions? There's a number of different ways that happens with women, a number of different ways that happens with men. One of the ways we got cut off from our emotions is we all went to school. Okay? We went to school. All right, and one of the things they wanted us to do in school was sit down and be quiet. Now, what little boy that you're watching run around says, "What's your goal in life?" My goal in life is to sit down and be quiet. I mean, that youngster wants to move. He wants to climb. I once found my son, who's Down syndrome and autism and nonverbal. I could not find him. Okay? He's on the roof of the house. And he doesn't come down because he doesn't follow commands. So we had to go up and hoist him back over. But it took us forever to figure out how he got up there. Okay? But you know, it's just, this is what we men do. So, we go, we're told to sit down, and every bone in our body does not want to sit there. Alright? And so, and we look at the adults, and in theory, they're right. Which means there's something wrong with me that I am not having a blasted good time, like my mother and father say I should, sitting here in school, not moving, not saying a thing. You know, other than, dear God, may recess happen soon, so I can really let her rip. Okay, so we've got ourselves cut off from our emotional base. Now, why does that hurt us? Because you can't get through life without loss. You cannot get through life without loss. And when you have a loss, you need to grieve. And many men never learn how to grieve. Part of leadership is when that guy leaves our group. You know, we had a suicide in our company. And I said to the therapist, the leader of the therapist, decide whether or not you have the family's permission. And then the second thing is, if they want to go. But I found that going to the funeral allowed me to attach to the next client. You know, and so you as a leader have to grieve the losses of emotionally of people not making the men choices you want them to do. But we also have to work with our men and teach them how to grieve. Because often what brings a man into therapy or even willingness to look down on his knees and look up at the cross is some kind of grief event that he was ill-prepared to process because he's so overwhelmed. So the third one is emotional disconnection. Fourth one is the culture's attack on godly men. You have to, as a leader, be aware of how many times you're being attacked by the ungodly culture. You know, when it talks about in Romans, groaning, it just feels like a creaking ship, that we're on a ship trying to get through this ungodly environment, and the pressure on us is so great. By the nature of the commercials, we men are defined as simple, sexual, and aggressive. That's it. And we're not, as a result, are constantly being bombarded. And so we have to help ourselves as leaders of men, and we have to help the men we lead recognize the ongoing, regular assault that is occurring from a men's perspective. And we have to help, I want to go back to emotions real quick, understand men to understand the difference and accept their aggression. Accept their aggression. God made us aggressive. God made us aggressive. Exodus 4:11. Who made the deaf deaf? Who made the blind blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Okay. Who made my son Nick? Okay. Who's nonverbal? It is the Lord. Okay. He takes responsibility for it. I can go to him. We can have a disagreement about this. Okay. Men are aggressive. This did not surprise God. He set this up. When aggression moves to violence, whereby somebody is being violated their essence, both on an emotional level and a physical level, now that's a problem. And so in leadership, it's okay for us as leaders to be, come on guys, you know, we have to be comfortable with our own aggression. But when I end up putting someone down, now I've stepped over the line. So the fourth one after emotional disconnection was the conflict with the culture. And the last one as we end is we as men have to understand that we're not just human doings, but we're human beings. And there's a right amount. Rick Warren, I was at a group of guys, and I got a chance to talk to him. And he said, you know, I send men out on missions who are ill-prepared from a theological perspective. And then when they go get their butts kicked, they come back and they really want to learn. And so learning how to connect up the man who's a doer and creating the right mission, the right outreach, the ways you use those projects to get men to bond with each other, and then recognizing because of the doing, you create opportunities of being, so that they can be. So the two have to kind of have the right balance with each other. There has to be enough doing for us, where we go out and have a cup of coffee with some guys. And then there also has to be enough being where we're working with our own stuff before Jesus Christ, allowing God to help us grow. We need that ongoing balance as within our own lives as leaders as well as others. Any questions or comments before we end?
Yeah. On the Navy SEAL example you gave, and guys getting to a point and then, you know, voting with their feet, yeah, and leaving something. Is there a way you can tell whether they're voting that way because they've reached the limit or because they're not getting value from what they think, you know, what you've got them doing?
I think that's a good question, and that's why I think we have to talk to them individually, so we can't narcissistically assume ours is great and they're just blankety blanks for leaving. Okay, so I think we have to be attuned to that. We also have to recognize that, you know, I deal with a lot of mandated clients, and you treat a mandated client differently than you treat a self-motivated client. And some of the men that are coming, despite it being a church function, are mandated. Okay? There's a pressure from their wives, etc., to kind of come out. All right? And part of it, and I say to therapists, don't get hung up on the mandate. Because at the end of, I led a sex addiction group for 20-some years, Voyeur's Exhibition, everything, child pornography, everything. And X percent, I would say at least 50% to 70% of the time, the mandated clients continued in treatment on their own past the mandate. And so part of our goal okay, is to figure out what those men's needs are and connect up with them in a way that it moves from why they originally wanted to come to a deeper, more long-term committed nature. And so at the very beginning of your process that you're setting up, you want to be attuned to that, and you want to have different ways to figure that out. We also found out that in our program that the nature of the group leaders, we broke guys up and we call them campfires, okay, and we noticed that some campfires remained the same, okay, some campfires doubled in size, and we had a big problem, okay, because eventually if it gets big enough, you don't have intimacy, and some of the campfires completely died off. And so part of it is we have to look at the nature of our leadership team. Okay, make sure that guy is not working his issues out through the men that he's leading, or frankly, boring. So you guys can start to, any questions, I'll answer them up here. Make sure if you haven't gotten our book already that you take one, and I'll see you guys later at the table. I'll answer any more personal questions here.